Matter before us is Courtney Blakey, Blakely versus University of Virginia Health Systems. Good morning, counsel. Would you like to reserve some time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. 3 minutes, please.
Okay, we're delighted to hear from you.
My name is Ben Trickle. I'm here on behalf of Courtney Blakey. And we are respectfully requesting that this court reverse the decision below, which is based upon a unprecedented ruling and improperly applies the AMA guides and award Ms. Blakey the rating that she is entitled to based upon the physicians who actually examined her. Now, we are 2 years post-application for permanent disability benefits, and under the Virginia Workers' Compensation Act, this is a one-time award that an injured worker receives for their lifetime for a permanent injury. And what you won't see in the commission opinion, it's addressed in 5 lines, is the evidence that was presented by Ms. Blakey and her mother. She cannot lift more than 5 pounds with her right arm.
May I interrupt for just a minute?
Yes, sir.
Having said that, and I appreciate your point, this is probably one of the most thorough opinions that we've received from the commission. It obviously was both the majority and the dissent put a great deal of effort into it. They're trying to educate us, no doubt, on the way the AMA impairment guidelines work, and some of us may have had some relationship with it from prior practice. But there is this overarching question, which is, when you say the commissioners are not experts in the AMA impairment guidelines, I can promise you appellate judges aren't either. And if someone's got to make the call here as to how the guidelines precisely work when you're supplementing an impairment percentage with pain or subjective variables, is it really something that the appellate court should be superintending at the level of detail that you, I think, are asking us to do?
Absolutely, because courts do it every day, but they do it through expert testimony. They don't supplant the experts. And what we have here is 5 lines of evidence and 15 pages of agenda. This case is not about whether the violinist gets the same disability rating as the NFL lineman. That if a lineman in the NFL breaks 5 fingers on a hand, that person's going to be taped up and in the game next week. A violinist has that injury, they're disabled, they may lose their career. Do they get the same rating? That's not what's before the court, and that was the issue the commission is.
Can I interrupt you there? Of course. But I didn't read the majority to say that they're somehow bound by the impairment guidelines. They're just using it as a guide, and it's sort of like a sentencing guidelines. You can use it as a guide, and if you don't think you want to go beyond it, you can leave it there. So they chose
applying the evidence. Would there be any doubt that the loudest howls would be from the Commonwealth if the only evidence in this case was Dr. Socia's 43% rating? And that's not a rating at all, but if that was the only evidence before this court, is there any doubt that the greatest howls would be? There's no evidence to support this.
I'm not sure that's a good way to put it, because you'd be surprised how many times insurers and carriers and defendant corporation comes before us howling at the sparsity of evidence for an impairment percentage, and we say, you know, it's not our call. It's a fact finder's call. And the fact they've given up even appealing the great majority of those kinds of cases because we've clarified our role a little bit in recent years.
Well, Your Honor, I think what the issue in this case that we've attempted to address in our briefs is that the rule of law should apply over the rule of results. And when you have a body charged with liberally interpreting an act, and they ignore evidence, and they instead implement an agenda that is inflexible and dogmatic, that's the classic rule for the courts.
I'm cutting you off so many times, but you've referred twice to an agenda. That's quite a loaded expression. What's the agenda that you're fearful is being implemented by this majority opinion?
Well, when you take a guide, and the AMA guides are merely a guide, to impairment, to help a physician determine a disability rating, and you say, we are going to apply that guide and we're going to ignore the medical evidence.
Did they say they're going to ignore the medical evidence, or they just didn't think that the evidence was credible enough to supplement the guide?
Well, let's look at the evidence, okay? And it's very important to do that. We have Dr. Socia, who never examines this lady, the two doctors who examine her say she has a 72% permanent disability, and they document it. And the commission throws out the opinion because of a Scrivener's error, because the doctor referred to the conversion table as table 16.8 instead of 16.2. We included that in our appendices, because when you look at the AMA guide, you find out the conversion table is 16.8 and not 16.2, and that's the only thing he could have been referring to. But Dr. Socia did not examine the claim, was not aware of her medical history, and all he states is, I think a 43% rating would be reasonable. That rating does not say it is more probable than not that she has a 43% rating. And if you look at what he relies on 239 of the record, you've got two columns. You've got class 3 and class 4 injuries. Well, the range for a class 3 is 26 to 49. The range for a class 4 is 50 to 100%. How on earth can this physician determine a class 3 or class 4 without looking at the patient? What person would allow a doctor to treat them without an examination? So he doesn't say
the commission felt
for a rating is there must be maximum medical improvement. He doesn't. Now, the rejected opinion by the commission, and you can look at this on page 275 of the record, Dr. Phillips' opinion is trash, according to the commission. Not worth the paper it's printed on. Now, they've fly-specked it because they found a pretextual means for disregarding it, because he referred to the wrong cross-reference table.
But I have to caution you, those are such strong terms, and it implies a decision-making bad faith that you can win without doing that to begin with. And secondly, it's not that evident from the record that there's this subjective ill will towards the position you're advocating. Can't you just stick to the actual rulings that...
Well, I was trying to, and if it comes out, you know, if it sounds like it's a personal attack, it's not intended. But when the role of the appellate courts is to correct error, and if we were all perfect, we wouldn't need appellate courts. And there is clear and manifest error here because there was uncontroverted evidence. There's no evidence here to weigh and balance. The only evidence before
this. Let me see if I can help me get a little bit focused here. As I understand your argument in this case, is that there was overwhelming evidence to support the nature and extent of Ms. Blakey's injury, that there were physicians who were treating her and other professionals who came and testified in the case as to the extent of the injuries that she has sustained and her future prospects. On the other hand, the evidence presented by the University of Virginia was basically one person looking at the AMA guidelines, the AMA guidelines, and coming to the determination that she was simply entitled to a 43% determination, which, based upon your argument, is suggesting some sort of mandatory guidelines that is going to be required if we allow that to happen in the context of this case.
Yes, but you have to go a step further, that the Dr. Socia's evidence would never pass muster by this court, would never pass muster because, A, he didn't assign a rating that's more probable than not, and he made no finding of maximum medical improvement.
Well, does he need to say more probable than not?
The cases clearly say that, Your Honor.
Well, the tort cases say that, but the comp appeal cases say reasonable degree of medical certainty.
I believe there's a case cited in our rebuttal brief where this court specifically said that there must be evidence that is more probable than not in order for a burden of proof to be met. But in this case, what we have is the commission saying...
That's the Westmoreland Coal case?
I'm sorry?
That's the Westmoreland Coal case?
That's...
Westmoreland versus Campbell, 7th Virginia App, 217-1988 case?
Sounds correct, Your Honor.
But is it required that that locution be used? That the doctor has to say more probable than not? He can't just say, in my opinion, this is what the diagnosis is, and I think that's reasonable.
Well, that's what the case law says, Your Honor, that a rating that just that's speculative is not going to be followed. And Spotsylvania v. Hart specifically says, if there's no finding of maximum medical improvement, you can't give a rating. But the full commission in this case says Dr. Phillips' opinion is sufficient to support a 43% rating. Now, what irony. The doctor who says this lady is entitled to a 72% rating, that's not probative evidence, but we're going to say This report is sufficient to support a rating that's not a rating because the doctor did not find maximum medical improvement. Page 275 of the record. That the data in Dr. Phillips' report was insufficient, but it does allow the commission to calculate a 43% rating. How is that possible? So pardon me if I'm upset at a ruling, and I don't attribute it to malevolence. I think it's a error, but I respectfully submit that when you have five lines, when you have two people testify without contradiction, and the claimant testified her treating doctor was aware that she was working. There's a big red herring that because the doctor, Dr. Eberle, the treating doctor who's treated Ms. Blakey for 4 years, said that that she is unable to work because of this injury, that somehow he was not familiar with her work status.
This is not your typical case where someone is unable to work. As a matter of fact, the lady here was an LPN and actually went out and got an RN because the nature of her work would change as an RN and she wouldn't have to do the things that she would be required to do as an LPN. So right. This isn't someone who's just sitting around.
Yes, that's correct. And what the full commission said is she's working as an LPN. The fact is she works 6 days a month and she's has a substantial wage loss. She was working two jobs before the injury. She's making $150 a week now. But that's the type of oversight. Commission wouldn't consider that she takes pain medication and the pain medication sedates her and renders her incapable of working when she takes it because of the nature of her job. It's a hazard. They didn't talk about, she's got full range of motion of the right arm. She can lift it above her head, but it gets numb and she can't keep it there very long. So technically she has full range of motion, but she can't use the arm.
The 72% AMA impairment rating, was that driven by the two doctors' interpretation of the way the AMA guidelines matrix works? Or was it one of these departure from the guideline situations?
I think they applied the guidelines.
That's pretty significant, though, isn't it?
Because, yes, it is.
Because we're not really debating whether or not the guidelines are mandatory or not mandatory, or whether you can depart from the guidelines, because obviously you can. And I don't see anything in what the commission majority is saying that suggests you can't or shouldn't or they won't, which I think is the agenda you're asserting. But there are three doctors, two of them interpreting the guidelines one way, a third interprets it a different way, and we have two of three experienced commissioners who are as familiar with the AMA guidelines as we are, probably maybe not as much as you, but certainly as much as me, saying that this is a reasonable difference of opinion. And if there's a reasonable difference of opinion, they get to choose.
If they're so expert in the guides, please look at the guides, the fifth edition, and you tell me where in the guides it says a physician can only allow 3% for pain. This doctor allowed 8% for pain, loss of endurance, and loss of function. There's no limitation in that. Now, there's an argument here that to exclude the reference to the guides. When we went to the hearing, I objected to page 239 of the record because I said it's not in context. The deputy commissioner said, oh, no, I'm going to receive that because we're going to receive the entire guides in context.
Well, they have them on the shelf, probably behind where they're sitting.
But if you look at what they professed to apply, they did not apply it. And look no further than the 3% for pain. There's nothing that says a physician's judgment is limited to 3% for pain. And why can't the doctor that actually examines this patient say she's got a severe debilitating injury that her mother had to move into her house to help her take care of her five?
Did the commission hold that the 3% for pain number was a inflexible boundary?
Yes.
They held that?
Yes. It's in the opinion, Your Honor. And that's one of the things the dissent points out, that we are not experts in the guides, but courts are experts in applying evidence. And there's no evidence to support this award. There's no evidence to weigh or balance. And the commission should have given this lady the rating of the physicians that evaluated her and not invented a rating that the Commonwealth argued was insufficient. Remember, they appealed that 43% rating. They said it was insufficient, the claimant shouldn't have it. So this rating, which does not address maximum medical improvement, which doesn't say it's with reasonable probability, which doesn't say that it's more probable than not, was really something that came out of the blue. We would ask this court to liberally construe this act and to apply it in accordance with the evidence. There is nothing in this opinion that is remedial or construed in the claimant's favor.
Okay. Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court, Ryan Doherty for the employer, the Commonwealth and UVA Health Systems. And I promise not to howl, so you won't have to deal with that. But I do think what has been made clear, and we tried to make clear in our brief today, is that the claimant has an issue with the commission's findings of fact. This court deals with questions of law. You all will not retry facts or reweigh evidence.
The argument's made, as I understand it, is constructed as a question of law, an assertion of law, which is the commission unlawfully considered the AMA impairment guidelines as inflexible principles which they cannot depart from or they will refuse to depart from. If they actually had said that, that would be a question of law, wouldn't it?
Potentially. But they, in fact, if you look at the opinion itself, specifically said the opposite. They realize they are not bound by schedules or guides. And in fact, in this case, they weren't either. They took the totality of the evidence in the case. That included the medical records, that included the evidence from or testimony from the claimant, and also conflicting opinions from three different physicians, Doctors Eberle, Phillips, and Siasi. They reviewed that and came to a 43% PPD rate.
Let me ask you this, counsel. Let's turn it inside out again. Suppose we had a case that was before us, and you were representing your client, as you're doing very well right now, and the evidence that was submitted by the claimant suggested that she was entitled to a 40% rating, okay? And in addition to that, they brought in some evidence that somebody who hadn't interviewed or treated or at least spoken to the claimant says, I'm looking at the AMA guidelines and my interpretation of those guidelines suggests that she's entitled to 80%. And the commission said, okay, 80%. What would be your position?
Well, first I'll say that's not this case. But if we were dealing with that case, I think we would look to see if there was credible evidence to support it. Now, I think what you're trying to say is that there would not be credible evidence to support it because someone just looked at the AMA guides and treated them as inflexible. Mm-hmm. If they truly did that and said, here is a guide, this is where you are, and there is no under foundation, no other discussion of the facts, that would be a much closer case and one that we would have to discuss before we made any further decisions. But that is certainly not where we sit here today.
Opinion says we agree that we're not bound by the AMA guides in determining the degree of permanent impairment. However, Dr. Phillips indicated in his report that he based his rating on the AMA guides. Accordingly, in order to determine the weight to be given this rating, we must evaluate the rating in light of the guides. Is that's the holding that we're supposed to review as a agenda-driven abuse of discretion?
I would hesitate to put words in anyone else's mouth. I would find that that certainly would not support an agenda, and any agenda that's been assumed here is not borne out by the contents of the opinion that the commission wrote in this case. As the court duly noted, this is one of the most factually specific and driven cases that you may find in the commission's roles. And in doing that, they made sure to weigh the evidence and resolve conflicts in the evidence. And after doing that, and only after doing that, did they arrive at a 43% PPD rating. Any contention that they simply disregarded evidence or wholesale adopted Dr. Siasi's opinion isn't borne out by the opinion itself. If you read the opinion itself, they specifically say, you can consider Dr. Phillips' opinion along with the defendant's medical evidence. And as for any contention that the claimant's testimony was not considered or taken into account, one need only look to the deputy commissioner's opinion, which fully detailed the problems that the claimants in before this court have detailed.
Well, the majority opinion incorporated by reference the deputy's opinion on facts, so all of that consideration is incorporated by reference.
Correct, Your Honor. And that's the point we made in the brief and the point that I would make here today. And I think that specifically conflicts with what has been represented to the court.
Evidently, the deputy was part of the agenda as well.
Well, I would say that I do not see an agenda in this case. I see a deputy commissioner and a full commission that fully considered medical evidence and determined a PPD rating that was appropriate for the claimant in this case. And that was based on the totality of the evidence. Any suggestion that they inflexibly relied on specific guides or anything along those lines, again, I'll repeat, is not borne out by the commission opinion or the deputy commissioner's opinion that was incorporated by reference. If there are no other questions from the panel, we'll rest on a brief and reaffirm that we'd ask this court to affirm the commission's decision because it is not wrong as a matter of law and it's based on credible evidence.
All right, thank you, counsel. You have only a half a minute, but we'll give you an extra minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would ask the court to ask, where is the evidence to support this ruling? Westmoreland Coal says a rating or medical opinion must be more probable than not. This ruling does not meet the standards for maximum medical improvement, nor does it meet the standard for more probable than not. The commission's excluded evidence for pain. Why has the Virginia trial lawyers, the largest trial lawyer group in the state that's entrusted with representing injured people, taken a position in this case? When you have the...
Can I ask you this, more pertinent to the judgment call we have to make? The actual impairment rating, the AMA impairment rating that was adopted, 43%, was there ever an assertion in the commission or before the deputy commissioner at the evidentiary hearing that that opinion was inadmissible?
Yes.
And was that preserved at the full commission level? In other words, does the commission address whether or not the opinion should be considered at all because it didn't lack the proper magic words?
I believe that our assignments are replete with that this was, that there was no medical evidence to support the opinion.
Well, what I'm talking about is when a medical, well, you know this is better than I do, when a doctor provides an opinion that's not to a reasonable degree of medical certainty, it's not that you can't consider it, it's not admissible. You can't even get it in the record. Was that ever asserted at the commission level? In other words, did the commission ever rule on the point you're now making, which is the magic words weren't used, therefore the opinion's not admissible into evidence, as opposed to, well, you consider it, but it's not worth very much, which is
efficiency versus admissibility.
Signs of error number three.
I'm talking about the commission, because we can only rule on it if the commission's ruled on the point you're making.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Your Honor. We challenge whether there was any evidence to support the opinion, and that goes exclusively to Dr. Socia's finding.
Okay, fair enough. We appreciate your argument. We'll greet the two of you and then take up the last matter on our docket.